Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Tracy Lee. She's a Google developer expert and a JavaScript developer, and you're a serial entrepreneur. You've done all kinds of things.
Yes. Hi, nice to meet you. Nice to see you again, anyways.
Cool. Thanks for hanging out. You're also the co-founder of This.Labs. And what I think is interesting about it is that it's an agency, but it's framework agnostic. But then if I go and look at your Medium, it looks to me like you're trying all the JavaScript frameworks. You're like framework agnostic, framework non-denominational.
Yes, I love playing around with all the different frameworks and libraries and just sort of seeing the differences in how people think about things and also the similarities. I think it's amazing how we in the JavaScript world learn from each other all the time, and just watching again, you know, things get repeated and thinking, well, did we need to do that again? Or, wow, I'm really glad these people learned from these people.
Do you think that it's a little overwhelming? I mean, I'm a quasi JavaScript person. I wouldn't say I'm a front end. I'm kind of a full stack. But you know, people email me all the time and they say, "Should I learn Angular or React? Like either or?" And it seems to come down to an amount of time. Like how much time do I have available? Should people be saying things like, "Should I learn this or that?" Or should they just learn them all or learn none of them?
I think everybody has different opinions based on what they read. So they might read something that React is faster because X, and they might decide to go down the React path for that reason. Or they might read something about how Angular is more for enterprise, so they want to go that way. Or this is supported because of this, or this has this license. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, if you just test out a few things, like, I don't remember if it was you and I talking about this or somebody else, but I remember speaking to somebody about how, you know, learning technology in general is just about testing out a bunch of different things. And then once you feel like you're comfortable in one thing, then just sort of go all in on it for a few months. So really, you know, whether you choose React or whether you choose Angular or Vue or Ember, any of the other ones, it's really about, do you feel comfortable with this syntax? Does it give you what you need? Do you need to, you know, do you feel productive in it, right? Like, I think in the beginning for me, because I came from Ember and Angular, when I was starting to get into React, JSX didn't really make any sense to me. And so it really took me a little second to get familiar with it and get comfortable with it.
It seems like people are afraid that they're going to start down a path, maybe try it out, like you said, then commit their company or their product to it, and then hit some wall. Mm-hmm. And the wall is unspecified, right? We don't know. It's just a wall that we can't see, and that's why it's scary. And then we'll find that, wow, well, it worked great when I was fooling around, but then when I decided to do something, I don't know, put a million things in a data grid, it all fell apart. And now the whole company goes under. Like, I know that that's like a silly example, but I honestly think people are just afraid that they're going to paint themselves in a corner. Should they be?
I totally agree, because I hear that all the time as well. And I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, I see regrets on both sides. So sometimes I see people going down the React path and then realizing they really wish they had a little bit more convention around it, or, you know, they're really trying to scale this out across larger teams and then they run into some problems. Or I see Angular people saying like, oh, I really wish I had, you know, a smaller X, right? But again, those are just opinions. Those are just one people's opinions and nothing's right or wrong. Like if you ask some people, Angular is actually faster than React. If you ask some people, React is faster than Angular. But I think what it really comes down to is the technical expertise. When I was building my first startup, I remember not coding, not knowing how to code, and thinking, okay, do I go Rails or Python or PHP? Mm-hmm. And like, who knows, right? So I went down the PHP path and, you know, that didn't work out. But then I ended up going down and rewriting my entire app in Python, but it was because I had the technical leadership. And again, that's what really matters. If you have the technical leadership in a specific framework or library, then you're going to be able to maneuver and do the things you need to do, right? I think where people suffer is they get to a point and then they don't have the expertise to get them to, you know, point B, let's say, after they go start down a path.
Now that's interesting and almost a little bit controversial. It's like saying, I learned this skill. I learned a little bit of Angular, but I really don't understand what it's doing underneath, or I really don't understand what JavaScript is doing. And then I hit a wall. The question is that wall an Angular technical wall, or is it a personal wall that I hit when I really had no idea what I was doing in the first place?
I think a lot of it is just not knowing how or what you're doing. A lot of the times, like there was recently some conversations on Twitter about how, you know, stop just installing, you know, different little stop NPM installing everything to try to solve your problem. Try to dig a little bit deeper into the framework or library that you're using, because there's probably a solution there. So I think a lot of the times when you hit that frustration, you look externally or look for a reason or think, oh, I need to redo it because I've heard that I might have, you know, run into this problem or things like that. But a lot of the times, if you just, you know, if you just dig a little bit deeper, or if you ask somebody, I mean, I think this is the importance of having mentors as well. You can usually figure out how to untangle yourself from whatever mess you've gotten yourself into, or whatever snag you're hitting.
Interesting. I recently had Chris Ferdinandi on the show talking about just everyone should just use vanilla JavaScript and basically push JavaScript as far as you can before you feel the need to pull in another framework.
Yikes. That would be so painful for me. I would cry.
So where do you find the balance? Because I feel like you're advocating for both. Like, you need to understand what's going on, but there's value in frameworks.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I got an email just yesterday from someone who was basically scolded at work because they wanted to do some cross HTTP call, and they brought in jQuery, and their boss was like, you don't need to use jQuery anymore for that. That's just a simple thing. It's built in now. I think there's a lot of us that are still stuck in that world where if you want to go and grab a node, you know, a node of the DOM, you'll do it with the dollar sign and open a parentheses, as opposed to doing the native JavaScript stuff.
Yeah. So I think the power of frameworks is that you can get started immediately and you can get productive immediately. So I'm totally, you know, I don't think hand rolling things is a great idea. And the reason I don't think it's a great idea is because people have already solved this problem. Whatever problem you have, managing state, like routing, you know, whatever, they've already done it for you. And, you know, a lot of these CLIs these days, right, just handle your entire build system and everything like that. So you don't have to figure out like some custom configuration. And you just don't, you can actually spend time writing code versus trying to set up your environment and things like that. And I think this is why, people, you know, coming from, let's say, the .NET world are actually much more comfortable in places like, let's say, Angular, because you have the CLI. You know, I mean, I think most people, and I haven't done .NET, but this is what I've heard, you know, like everything is just sort of set up for you already, right? So that's sort of like the same thing with Angular. Everything's set up for you already. You can just get productive immediately versus having to figure out how to, like, let's say, configure Webpack or something like that.
Yeah, I think that it's very prescriptive. Like the way that I think one of the reasons that I think Rails, you know, gained prominence was it wasn't like, here's a million ways to do this. It was like, here's the way to do this. Do it like this.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And that's kind of what I like. And I think that if you are, let's say, a more seasoned developer and sort of have your own ideas and ways of how you want to do things, or if you're the type of person who just really needs to know what's going on, like you're not comfortable about, you know, doing like ng-start or something like that, or ng-serve from your terminal and serving up application or something like that, then I think a great way to go, for example, this is why a lot of people, I feel like, choose React, right? Because you have, let's say, 5 different ways you can do CSS. You have all these different ways you can do state management. You know, you can configure everything you want. So I think that's why people sort of are drawn to that. People who really like writing code and really like building and creating, you know, like, it's sort of the geeky developer sexiness right now. Like, oh, I want to write code, and I get to write code with React, so let me do that. So, have you seen that at all? I mean,
I don't know if I'd put it that way, but I understand where you're coming from. I've noticed on looking at your Medium that you, like, not only do you explore lots of different things, but you're also really into, it seems, components and web components. And then there's this new Angular component dev kit. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. Component dev kit is actually just, it was just released by the Angular Material team. So, Material design components. The Angular Material is material design components specifically built for Angular by the Angular team.
And so material design, if I can interrupt you, is the make it look like this Google prescription for like how things should be pretty. It's like their Bootstrap.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people in the industry these days follow the material design guidelines in terms of how, you know, they think about style guides and things like that. So Angular Material decided to move the components to a component dev kit. And the reason they decided to do this is because they realized that, hey, people writing Angular, you know, probably a few of them want to actually use their own styling. So they took all the, it's basically components without the material design on top of them. So you have things like accessibility, and, you know, you can have your date picker and things like that, and you can slap your own style on it. It was just released a few months ago, so they're still working on it, but a lot of people are starting to use it in production and testing it out. If you just look at the number of downloads per week on NPM, it's growing pretty fast.
I see. So it's meant to make the hard stuff easier, but also not get in your way if you want to make things look the way you want. Like, I was looking at the data table, the CDK or component dev kit table, and they specifically call it out as an unopinionated data table.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's actually really beautiful, because you look at a bunch of these different companies who are build these custom components, right? Like Kendo UI is a good example. And it's going to be really intriguing how this changes the industry, right? Because Kendo UI built these specific components for Angular where you can slap on your own styles for it and things like that. But all of a sudden, the Angular team is actually giving that to you. So, like, is Kendo UI, for example, going to start building their components on top of the component dev kit? Like, what is that going to look like? I'm really curious.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. A good example is that the Angular Material stuff, or MD-table, is the material design data table. It sits on top of this dev kit table. So they're not just releasing it for people like Kendo, they're actually using it themselves. They're eating their own dog food, as they say.
Yes, yes, yes.
Interesting. So do you think, though, that in the future, in some post-2017 future, we're going to be able to write apps with no code, and it'll be drag and drop of web components and things like that?
I do think we're moving there. I think that there is... I think this is kind of what the Google Chrome team really hopes to do in the future. I probably shouldn't speak for them, but.
No, like, but you know, we're just, this is opinions, right? I mean, yeah. Like you say, you're a Google dev expert, which means you don't work for Google, but it's like a Microsoft MVP. They've given you this title because you know what you're talking about, but you don't speak for Google.
Right.
Just as I work for Microsoft, but this podcast is my own. And so our opinions are our own, to be clear. Mm-hmm.
Yes, 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 absolutely. But, you know, the whole idea that now it's so easy to build out components. Like for example, a lot of companies these days, right, if you just look at Polymer and what they were doing before, there's been a lot of improvements. But you can basically go to some of these Polymer sites and you can just drag and drop in a Google Map, right? And then mm-hmm. it's just going to use the Google Maps API and you can sort of configure this website by yourself. And then, you know, supposedly it just works. So I think a lot of things that we sort of have to do now, we're not going to have to do later. And web development is going to become very different. You know, like I only started coding about 2 years ago, right? So I sort of have had the luxury of working with different frameworks and libraries and have a lot of stuff handed to me, right? But I'm sure those of you who've been programming longer sort of see what we have now in today's world. But imagine if that's 10 times easier. It's going to be, you know, we're all going to be out of jobs or something. I don't know.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because speaking from in the historical context, if you think about things like Polymer, and by the way, for longtime listeners, we had Monica Dinkulescu on the show number 499. This was in October of 2015, so basically exactly 2 years ago, mm-hmm. Talking about Polymer and Chrome. Fast forward to today, and I'll put this in the show notes. If you go to polymer-designer.appspot.com, it's a Polymer grid that you can basically build an app in. It looks a lot like Visual Basic 3, except it's in the browser, which means that we were onto something, you know, back in the day when we were doing things like Visual Basic, dragging buttons around and having third-party maps and controls and stuff. But now we're doing it on an open platform that could be rendered theoretically by any browser.
Yeah, Monica's awesome. By the way, I've never heard her name pronounced, so it was really cool to hear you say that.
I can only hope that I got it right. We'll see.
Dinkulescu.
That's how she said it 2 years ago, so maybe I got it right. We'll see. So Polymer is hoping to sit in that world that jQuery did. jQuery said, things are hard, things are complicated, we'll fix a bunch of the quirks of JavaScript. Now, you know, Polymer is kind of like jQuery for web components. It sits on top of web components and makes it super, super easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Polymer 3.0 is coming out soon. And I think the thing about web components in general or Polymer, I think the Polymer team is sort of trying to say, well, we're talking about Polymer, but what we're really trying to talk about is web components, right? And Polymer is sort of the way to help us get to web components today while we're building for web components and while the browser standards are catching up. So, I think a lot of people's hesitation these days is backwards compatibility and things like that and whatever. But if you start working with Polymer components and you really sort of start getting educated in the space, a lot of large companies are actually adopting it. So a thing I see every week is companies saying, okay, you know, we have a bajillion apps. We need to manage all these applications. And, you know, we're sick of repeating code. And, you know, that might be a date picker, that might be a table, that might be the standard style of their header, right? And so they're doing things like trying to create component libraries that they can have as sort of one centralized database and then share that across all the different teams. So you see companies doing this using React, using Angular, using Polymer, probably using Vue as well. I know Vue is definitely catching steam. And also with Ember, right? Ember, you have the add-on library, so it's a little bit easier to do things like that.
Vue, or it's V-U-E, right? Mm-hmm. Seemed to come out of nowhere in the last year or so.
Yeah. I looked at it, and there was this article that came out about the number of downloads surpassing anybody, any framework or library. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that data and you think, okay, what is this, right? But the reason Vue is so popular is because it's so fast. And, you know, for us in the, you know, in North America, and maybe even Western Europe, we don't really have the concerns of crappy internet, right? And it doesn't, you know, cost as much. A lot of us have unlimited data plans. But when you look at India and China, right, every time you refresh a page, every time you do an app update, they're actually, you're actually having to pay for it. So imagine having to spend, you know, $3 every time you update an application, or every time you have to refresh a page, it costs you a dollar. So with those types of things, the smallness is probably not the right word, but the smallness of Vue is what's really, really, really appealing to these developers. And the earlier this year, I thought to myself, okay, we'll see what happens. Like, a lot of my friends were saying, oh, why don't we use Vue? And I was thinking, well, let's wait a little bit and see. But now, as I'm talking to people and as I'm talking to our clients and larger companies, there's a lot of companies using Vue in production. So I think it's time to hop on the bandwagon. People mm-hmm. really like it. So,
yeah. And now, of course, I said it felt like it came out just in the last year or two. As with all good things, you know, everyone is an overnight success from one person's perspective, but Vue has been around since 2013, 2014. It just feels like the hockey stick hit in the last year or two, and now everyone's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And to your point about the size of pages, back in 2015, there was an article about the size of The Verge, you know, TheVerge.com. It was 9.5 megabytes with 263 HTTP requests.
Wow.
And 100 of those were JavaScript.
That's intense.
You'd think it'd be all images, right? There was only a megabyte of images, but 7 megabytes of JavaScript.
Wow.
And that's really our fault, isn't it?
That is, I don't even know what to say about that, but
I blame myself.
You know, I wish, I have the luxury myself of being able to play around with technology and make fun applications and figure out how things work and teach people how easy it is to get started. And that's what I love to do. But I don't get to go into the deep, deep, dark depths of like, oh my God, you know, it takes X amount of time for this page to paint, or look how many repaints, or there's a leak in, you know, there's a leak in IE, or, you know, something.
Why is that, though? Is that because your clients are in the States and they don't worry about bandwidth, or do you have someone who does that for you?
Yeah, it's more because I don't actually handle a lot of the coding of our clients. I more do development and play when I'm speaking at the different conferences I go to and things like that. So I know enough to get started and to tell people why and to put people in the right direction, but I don't actually spend a lot of time actually writing the code.
So you said that you've only been coding for a couple of years, and it sounds like you have transitioned a little bit from writing code into more kind of community organizing.
I think, you know, actually, I keep going back and forth. So I started off community organizing in the JavaScript world. And, you know, then I decided, well, JavaScript, okay, I should probably learn how to do this JavaScript thing. And then so I started coding and I fell in love with it. And then I spent all my time coding. And then I realized that, you know, maybe I should be a little more productive with my life. And I decided to start doing things I'm really good at, which is community organizing and helping put people in the right direction and connecting people and things like that. So it's sort of half and half these days. I really wish I could spend more time in code, but
I think we all do. Unless we're being paid full time to write like by the line, I think a lot of us find ourselves in meetings about design and then we write code at night. I was talking to my buddy Damien, who works on ASP.NET, and we were trying to figure out how many hours a week we actually had to code. And it seems like all of us are doing it at night when the kids are asleep.
Yeah. It's kind of depressing. Like, lately I've been having to do really stupid, like, home things. Like, oh, I have to buy a couch, or, you know, just the things that drive me insane that I have to do. Or like, I have to trim the trees outside, and it pisses me off because I'm not spending my time coding. So it's very frustrating.
So you said that you've been coding for 2 years, but it sounds to me like you already know a lot more about JavaScript than I do, and I've been coding for many years. For people who are listening who might be, you know, coding 10, 15 years, but not deep into JavaScript, how do they get so kind of literate in such a short amount of time in the JavaScript world? Because I think we're all looking for that moment to jump in and mm-hmm. hopefully head in the right direction.
I think, you know, when people, if people have been in the industry for quite some time, the thing I hear is I hate JavaScript, and probably because it was a little bit more painful back in the day. But in the past few years, it has come so, so, so far. And it is just so, so easy to get started these days. And, you know, I don't think there's any right or wrong way. I personally don't think that, you know, you should just write vanilla JavaScript until you know the language, and then you should jump into a framework because then you'll understand what the framework or library is doing for you. I think you should, value the fact that frameworks and libraries help you get started and make your life a lot easier so that you can actually do something and accomplish something, right? So, you know, Angular has Angular CLI, and so it's really easy to generate components, different things like that, very much convention over configuration. Like React is the same way. Right now I'm playing with a lot of native script. So if you want to jump in and write mobile apps, native script has, you know, I mean, there's great plugins these days for everything, documentation's out there. So
have you done much TypeScript?
I love TypeScript. Yes, because Angular 2 and above uses TypeScript, and it's like my favoriteest thing ever.
So you use that, like, when you write your JavaScript, you're writing more TypeScript than you are writing, like, proper JavaScript, or, I don't know,
JavaScript? Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm writing TypeScript. I mean, to me, it's all one and the same. Like, I can't sometimes, again, because my knowledge spans so far, it's like, I can't distinguish the difference between ES5 and ES6 and TypeScript or JavaScript or Angular or...
Yeah, it is overwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, everything is just like, you get comfortable, you can build something. Like, that is the most important thing, and I think that's the most gratifying thing. So I remember taking a C++ class and thinking, oh my gosh, why do I have to spend all this time? I spent 3 hours trying to find a semicolon, and mm-hmm. it was so frustrating. And so I didn't finish the class. But when I was...
Really, that semicolon kicked you out of the class. I've had semicolons, like, kick my butt, and I've had semicolons cause me to have people come over to my desk and stare with me, and, like, that's a $10,000 semicolon you're looking at, because we took us, like, a month to find it.
Yeah.
But I've never had it kick me out of a course.
Well, I wasn't all that motivated to become a computer science major. You know, both my parents are computer science majors, but... I said, okay, I tried it. This is not fun. So I decided to move on and do major in business. But when I started in JavaScript, I immediately, 2 weeks after learning HTML and CSS and a little bit of JavaScript, I immediately got on Ember and Ember CLI. And what I was able to do was build an app immediately in, you know, 10 hours. And so... the fact that I was able to build an app and then deploy it and have a site that looks good because I just used material design, that is very, very, very gratifying. Also, the live reload where you can see what's happening immediately and you can see the changes on the page. Mm-hmm. I think that's what gets people really excited. I also think that's why it's really good for kids to learn JavaScript because, again, you immediately see your changes.
So it seems to me like you would say this is the time to get into JavaScript. Like, if you looked at it a couple years back and you're like, oh, JavaScript, you're saying no, totally now is the time.
Yeah, especially with, you know, Node. I mean, Node is just such a basic, common sort of utility these days for us, right? But it's on the server side now. I mean, you're seeing JavaScript everywhere, so you might as well. It's funny because us JavaScript
people... might as well. That's kind of...
Really
I wouldn't
should.
Say that's exactly a ringing endorsement. Yeah, you might as well.
Well, I think a lot of the things that are happening these days are like, you know, I love all frameworks and libraries, but I would say that Angular, since it's just very conventional and it's something that, you know, like, for example, it has typings because of TypeScript and things like that. Backend developers, for example, might just find it a little bit easier to get into Angular, right? Because it's going to be an environment maybe they're a little bit more comfortable and familiar with. There's a really great IDE for you. I don't know. I mean, just, you know, globally install Angular CLI, generate a new app, see what it scaffolds up, like code a few things, deploy it on Firebase. And I mean, that could be like a weekend thing for you.
So. All right. Well, people can check you out on your website. It's LadyLeet, LEET.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
And they can also find you on Twitter and check out your Medium, where all the different blog posts that we've been talking about are located.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Thanks so much. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.